listen to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast because Rod and Karen are hot.
When I get signed, homie, I'ma act a fool. Hit the dance floor, strobe lights in the room. Snatch a little secretary bitch for the homies. Blue-eyed devil with a fat-ass monkey. I'ma buy a brand new caddy on fours. Truck the hood up 2 times, deuce 4. Platinum on everything, platinum on wedding ring. Married to the game and a bad bitch chose. When I get signed, homie, I'ma buy a strap. Straight for the CIA set on my lap. Take a few M16s to the hood, pass them all out on the block, what's good? I'ma put the counter swap meet by the White House. Republican run up and get socked out. Hit the prayers with a Cuban link on my neck. Uneducated, but I got a $1 million check like that. Hey, welcome to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast. Your host Rod and
Karen.
And we're live on a Sunday. And I'm just gonna let you guys know ahead of time. My car, I had to put it in to get the brakes looked at. Mm-hmm. So there's a chance during this episode that I will get a call about my car.
Mm-hmm. Cause them brakes was grinding.
They was grinding.
I was like, what is that grinding noise?
Grinding. Shout out to having enough money to go get your brakes looked at when they start grinding. Okay.
Shout out to that.
I don't take any.
Cause we ain't always been in that position. We used to be like, we might have to wait till you slide, my nigga.
Yeah. I'm like, the light ain't on, you know.
Right. Come on. And even if the light is on, you were like, can you please wait 2 more paychecks?
Like, we not rich or nothing, but we all take your brakes to get looked at. Like, we got enough for that.
We put like this. We got take a look at them level, you know. Yeah. We might have to save up to get them fixed, but we like, hey, can you at least look up? I'll pay the little fee for you to take a look at them.
Mm-hmm.
Because like, before it's like, nah, I, but then you be like, I ain't even got the 50 for you to look at them.
Oh, the ghetto. The ghetto. The ghetto.
Yes.
And we have been there, you know. That's one thing I do like about, you know, getting older. Your disposable income a lot of times increases. So
well, we didn't have kids.
That's true too.
So that helps, you know. But anyway, my point being, I might get a call during the show. And if so, I may have to pause the show and answer this phone call. I will try to play y'all some music or something.
We'll keep the people listening live, entertained.
Yeah, live people will see, but everybody else, you know,
you get a skipping time.
Yeah, you get a little time traveler this week. speaking of which, this show is sponsored. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podomatic. Leave us 5-star reviews on iTunes and Stitcher. We appreciate those. We only got 2 last week. I would like to get that number up. Okay, somebody gave us a 5-star review that's only been listening for 2 weeks, okay,
putting the rest of y'all to shame.
If you've been listening more than 2 weeks and haven't left us a 5-star review, what is wrong with you?
I know y'all done been here. Y'all done bit the Martin Luther King fans. Y'all done bit the Obama fans. I mean, come on, dog.
So please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes and Stitcher. You can also leave feedback for us throughout the week. TheBlackGuyWhoTips.com. You can vote in polls at our website. You can become a premium member. TheBlackGuyWhoTips.com/premium. You can email us TheBlackGuyWhoTips@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
Follow us on all our social medias. The Black Guy Who Tips. It's very simple. We appreciate everybody takes the time out to do that because that's what keeps us afloat. The official weapon of the show is
the taser.
An unofficial sport.
Bullet Ball.
And Bullet Ball Extreme. Today's podcast brought to you by Tweaked Audio. Tweaked. I know I have a weird accent. TWEAKED. Tweaked Audio. They have all kinds of headphones. Okay. We just bought some the other day. Karen needed some headphones specifically for something at work. And I said, you know who got some great headphones that fit your ear ergonomically and everything? Got a noise reducing design. They sound great for music and talk.
Yes.
They got mic and non-mic versions.
Mm-hmm.
They got the Bluetooth wireless joints too.
Yes, they real nice.
It's Tweaked Audio, guys. TweakedAudio.com. And in addition to all that, the other reason we went is because they have a 1/3 off for all our listeners if they use code TBGWT.
Mm-hmm. Some of y'all listening right now, we're going from the left ear to the right ear to the left ear to the right ear. Y'all know y'all having to twist your little thing to kind of get it coming through, because sometimes we go out in both of your ears.
Yeah, you got to turn your head a certain way. Can't move at your desk. Just get you some new headphones.
Come on.
Use discount code TBGWT at TweakedAudio.com. They also give you free shipping, and it comes with a limited warranty. So you get third off, free shipping, and lifetime warranty. Oh, why am I trying to say warranty? Lifetime warranty, which is dope, because you know, if you like, if your headphones break or short or something, boom, you hit them up. I think the only thing is, like, if you like do something like throw them in the pool, you know, they get wet, they will not give you just a replacement for free, but in many cases they'll give you a discount on your next set headphones. Also, they get to you within a few days.
Oh yeah.
So I mean, go ahead and do this now, and then like I said, whenever you have a problem with them, email them, get you some new headphones, you know. So mm-hmm. Yeah, instead of having to, you know, break some headphones, buy some more, break some headphones, buy some more,
right?
That cycle just sucks, and we all know it. We all do this thing. You go cheap on headphones, they break. You go expensive on headphones, they break. Either way, it kind of sucks. So tweakedaudio.com, code TBGWT. All right, let's see. There's all kinds of news to talk about. I don't even know where to start. I guess I'll start with what was hot on Twitter. Dr. Dre,
mm-hmm.
Who is not a real PhD.
No.
I don't know if you guys heard.
At least I don't think he is. No.
Okay. Dr. Dre, not the one to hang out with Ed Lover.
No.
But the rapper slash actor slash mogul. He brags about his daughter getting into USC on her own. All on her own.
On my own.
I think he was trying to take a shot at his fellow Hollywood white people that got in trouble for getting their kids into these exclusive schools by rigging the system and, you know, bribing people and getting caught in a federal RICO charge.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And you know what he did? He made him, he posted that and sipped some tea.
Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, and for full disclosure, Dr. Dre, you know, after he said this, he took a picture with his daughter, said, my daughter got accepted into USC all on her own. No jail time. which is funny knowing that he's from NWA and all the stuff that, you know, they've gone through. It's kind of interesting thinking about that. But also in 2013, he made a $70 million donation to the school for the creation of the Jimmy Iovine and Andre Young Academy for Arts, Technology, and Business of Innovation.
Mm-hmm.
So he donated the old school way.
Right. The way that you don't go to jail for, you know.
Yeah.
That's the whole point. He didn't say he never donated or nothing like that. He was just saying, ain't no jail time what I did.
Mm-hmm. So he, you know, I saw people on, you know, Twitter that were really, you know, going in on it, which is kind of it's kind of I see it both ways on this joint, because on the one hand, yeah, he gave money, and my, like, the point is he ain't going to jail for it. So
mm-hmm.
Even if you felt like this, you know, whatever. The second thing is, I don't find that there's any reason to necessarily disbelieve that his daughter is a good student.
Correct.
Unless people have proof of that, I don't know why people would be like, well, this is only because of this money situation. You know, I feel like, you know, maybe people do have some proof of that. She's not a good student or something like that, but I don't know. I don't see any reason to be like, she wouldn't have got in, you know, on her own merit, right? That being said, I saw people bringing up, like, you know, he should have got jail time for what he did to D Barnes and stuff like that, you know, which, I mean, valid. What am I gonna say? He shouldn't have, like,
right.
I also think that was a travesty of justice and fucked up, and it's been weird to watch how he's been able to flourish, and, you know, D Barnes is like struggling.
Correct.
In life now, you know, and this dude's like a, you know, billionaire and shit, but mm-hmm. it's not like somebody on Twitter can do anything about it or mm-mm. whatever, but
that's the justice system.
You know, people still had like comments and stuff about not liking him, but to me, I'm like, but what that had to do with his daughter though?
Correct.
You know, so, you know, and then the last point I'll make is, this is also like, for some of those black Hollywood celebrity types, they probably feel a bit vindicated
mm-hmm.
because the only people that got caught up in that shit was white people, because white people still racist. They was like, we're cheating the system and we're not telling any of our black, like, you know, coworkers, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. Like, none of them are gonna get the memo that we out here cheating to get our kids in school. Like, it's a reason that none of the black people got caught up in that shit. So, you know, it was like a little bit of bragging, but it turned into like, you know, Think Peace Central and all that shit. And I was like, yeah, all right.
That's normally what it turns into.
Yeah, I tapped out at, you know, at the fun.
Yeah, that's my thing. I'm here for the fun.
Right. So, it was all over the place. And I'm like, so now we got to discredit this black girl.
Because it was never about her. But for a lot of people.
Barbara Streisand.
The singer?
The singer. She did a very, controversial interview. And, it was a lot. She was talking about Michael Jackson.
Okay.
Of course, I think her and Michael were friends when he was alive, like in 1986 and shit. Well, she says, the legendary singer and actress said that Wade Robson and James Safechuck, whose allegations against the late King of Pop resurfaced in the recent documentary Leaving Neverland, were thrilled to be there, and that what allegedly happened to them didn't kill them. She's 76. She made the strange comments to a British newspaper, The Times, in a piece out Friday, in which she said that Jackson's sexual needs were his sexual needs.
Oh, no.
She says she absolutely believes the allegations of abuse by Robson and Safechuck, but puts more blame on the parents than Michael Jackson.
No.
His sexual needs were his sexual needs, coming from whatever childhood he has or whatever DNA he has. You can say molested, but those kids, as you heard say, grown up Robson and Safechuck, they were thrilled to be there. They're both married and they both have children, so it didn't kill them. I feel bad for the children. I feel bad for him. I blame, I guess, the parents who will allow their children to sleep with him. Why would Michael need those little children dressed like him and in the shoes and dancing in the hats?
Oh, no. She just keeps going.
As a lifelong fan, this is what the director of the Dan Reed, the director of Leaving Neverland, said to her on Twitter. It didn't kill them. At Barbara Streisand, did you really say that?
Right.
Others were equally outraged. As a lifelong fan, I'm deeply disappointed in your remarks regarding Michael Jackson. You know, so that was some Twitter stuff. Yeah, it was a very callous interview, I would say. Very cold blooded. I think also, as someone who's watched most of the documentary, I'm almost done now. And I do feel like the documentary is probably too long. Like, they probably could have cut stuff out. And I'm not talking about because it's so graphic, it's just long. But the reason it's long is because people haven't believed these guys for so long that they had to go into painstaking detail to show people, like, these things
aren't made up.
Happened. This is not made up. Here's proof of this. Here's proof of that. I was here. I was there. You know, and for the different excuses people have, which have always rang hollow to me, you know, like, I always felt like he's a kid. He never had a childhood and all this shit. Like, nah, that's not just a 30 something year old man is not sleeping with little boys. I did, you know, it was not a coincidence to me that after he went on trial, suddenly he started being famously attached to women, you know, Lisa Marie Presley, the Australian woman who had his kid,
He quote unquote went black again. Like,
right,
with
right.
His roots.
Nation of Islam, fruit of Islam shit. You know.
They don't really care about us.
Right, right. I always thought that shit was like really see through and kind of pathetic. I thought when he, I mean, look, the dude had two white kids and was like, these my children. Like, it's like, it was just like, there was a lot of shit about him. Now I was just like, yeah, this shit seems fucked up, you know? At any rate, Barbara Streisand says this shit and it just comes off cold. And I guess ultimately she says she does believe him. But what came for me for the documentary is that you can see the grooming and how it fucks you up for life.
Right, and they were fucking children. You're skipping over the fact that, yes, they were assigned to be there. They were fucking children.
Yeah.
They were kids.
But you can see, like, a charismatic, very rich man took an interest in them and their careers, their, and I think that's what confuses a lot of people that just want to like Michael Jackson is they're like, I wanted Michael Jackson's attention. You're just so lucky to have his attention. whether that became sexual, whether it was abusive or not, you were just fortunate to get him to, because he was such an idol and people worshiped him. Mm-hmm. And so there's this disconnect where it's like, even they now as grown ass men have like a bit of that, they're still a bit enamored with those memories because they were such good memories as a child, except for the sex shit. Right. You know what I mean? So it's like, this dude flew, I liked dancing like this guy. This guy took an interest in me, flew me from Australia, bought my parents a house. After the first trial, bought my parents a house, and we, you know, put me in TV commercials, music videos, supported my film career, supported my dance career, to the point where even when he was doing these things to me, I actually testified on his behalf as a kid. And I find it very ironic that people want to use that testimony against these grown men now, because these are the same people that think, R. Kelly got these women in a cult and they're brainwashed. Hey, y'all don't think those women are telling the truth. When Gail interviewed those women, did any of y'all say, well, that's the truth, so I guess nothing else to see here? Or did you say, those women are not telling the truth because they got them brainwashed? Well, that would be even easier to do to a fucking child. You know what I mean? So it was just kind of like, you know, it's very hard to watch because it makes you so, well, for me, it makes you so upset that people are so unwilling to let go that this dude did it just because they like his music. You know, I like a lot of people's music that are fucked up.
Same.
I get that Twitter is canceling people and I can't listen to this, and I get that that's their thing, but I think most people in real life are not that way. They talk a good game, but in real life, most people like stuff regardless of who made it, if it's quality stuff. I just wish it didn't extend to, because I like this, now I have to defend this person. No, I like this song. It has nothing to fucking do with this guy's personal life and all this shit. And I still can think he's a piece of shit for doing these things. But yeah, Barbara Streisand said that shit basically on some, well, he didn't kill him.
But you ain't talking about the other shit that goes along with them, quote unquote, not dying like these.
They had families.
Come on.
So I guess everything was okay.
Emotionally fucked them up, spiritually fucked them up, mentally fucked this, fucked them up all the way around.
Right. Like, that's just such a ridiculous thing for her to say.
You ain't die. Oh, okay, but it don't mean it's not gonna leave scars. What are you talking about?
Right. And she did end up apologizing. I thought I had the article for it. Maybe I didn't save it. Let me pull it back up. Because I know she apologized, and I think we should look at that, because I don't think you just skip over that shit. Give me a second to look it up though, or for Google to do its thing. So she said she was profoundly sorry for controversial remarks on Michael Jackson. I saw she had tweeted out a screenshot. It wasn't Notes app though, because Barbara's classy. Okay, she would never do Notes app. I'm profoundly sorry for any pain or misunderstanding I caused by not choosing my words more carefully about Michael Jackson and his victims. I didn't mean to dismiss the trauma these boys experienced in any way. Like all survivors of sexual assault, they will carry this for the rest of their lives. I feel deep remorse, and I hope that James and Wade know that I truly respect and admire them for speaking their truth.
Which you could have said the first time.
Yeah, it's kind of a just hilarious apology, because like, you clearly were not respecting their pain and all that shit when you said that shit. Like, there's really not two ways to, like, there was no accident in the they walk it off nature of it. And also, just there's this other part of this too, that is, it's because they're men. Like,
correct.
We wonder why men don't come forward this kind of shit. This is why. A lot of people create an environment where it's like, well, you're less of a man for this, or you'll be all right, you know? Whereas if this was victims of R. Kelly, if this was victims of Harvey Weinstein, if this was victims of Dr. Click Possible.
Yeah, you know, I wonder what did she have to say about Weinstein and Hustable?
Yeah, because right, to many people, I'm not saying she said nothing. She might have said something, but that would actually make it probably worse. Because she didn't say, those women will be all right. No, I guarantee she didn't say that.
I'm sorry, and that's my statement. You didn't say this.
Right.
You know, you'd have been like, I believe them victims, kind of the end of it. You wouldn't have said they'll survive. That's right. Very callous.
And like with the Me Too movement, I think for a lot of people it's been seen as a men versus women type of thing. And a lot of people in practice have turned it into that, like, in all fairness. I'm not saying they're delusional or anything, but it's supposed to be survivors being able to speak. It's supposed to be about people that have traditionally been shut down and silenced having a voice, not just men versus women, not just, you know, to, in all fairness, not even just how much money I make. Like, you know, it's turned into wage gap stuff. Not saying those are bad things.
Right.
But that was not what Tarana Burke's Me Too was. That was not really what the Me Too stuff that Alyssa Milano tweeted about when they first started. It was about sexual assault and sexual harassment and manipulation from powerful people in the industry that were abusing people. And that's not just a woman thing. That's not just a man thing. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean all victims are women or all victims are men or anything. It just means people use this stuff. There's same sex type of assaults and manipulations that have come up in the wake of Me Too. And so it's just kind of interesting to see in this how quickly people are so dismissive. And part of it is their love for Michael Jackson, but part of it is literally just the fact that he did it to boys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and for black people, he did it to white boys, and we go all the way back to the Jackson 5 with Michael Jackson. So it's like, we are so committed to like glossing over this. I saw people that were mad at Barbara Streisand that haven't been mad about any of the shit from the documentary with Michael Jackson. I'm like, how you skip over being mad at him? Even she skips over it to the parents. I know people that are mad at the parents, but not mad at Michael Jackson. How does that make sense?
Right.
You know, and I think, I was listening to a podcast called, I think Shrink Tank. And they had two episodes on the psychology of, leaving Neverland. It's a very good podcast. I really like it. And, they talked about, you know, one of the guys was like, I'm mad at the mom. I'm mad at the family. And, you know, and they're all psychologists and stuff, but they were like, also somebody said, I think he picked family. He groomed the whole family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like he didn't groom the kid. Like, this wasn't like R. Kelly absconding with someone's kid and grooming the kid until a point where they would basically brainwash and they're a little too old for the parents to control, and but are obviously still too young to be an adult. And that's that, like, money spot for Robert Kelly.
Right.
But for Michael Jackson, he didn't do this to every kid, not to every family. He picked and chose the families he could get away with this shit with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you had a rich, powerful family, if you had a family with like a, like Macaulay Culkin, he's not going to do that to
like
them.
Like means, right.
Yeah. Corey Feldman, he's not going to do that to him. You know, but this kid from Australia, none of us fucking know. They don't have the money and the power, the means or the fame to do anything, like.
Or to fight back.
Right. To really do anything, you know, that no one would want to believe. You know, Macaulay Culkin said that shit. We want to believe Macaulay Culkin is not lying. We don't care about these guys like that. And so, yeah, it's just funny to see the complete difference when it comes to male victims. I think that's a huge part of it.
Agreed.
So that was, you know, and I think, and it's not just her, there's a lot of people that have defended him tacitly or whatever and not cared. I guess Diana Ross says something. She tweeted over the weekend, this is what's on my heart this morning. I believe and trust that Michael Jackson was and is a magnificent, incredible force to me and many others. Stop in the name of love. That seemed like a, hey, don't, please stop talking about this. His assaults and all this abuse and shit. Like, the motherfuckers cannot get over the fact that they were close to him or liked him, and I don't expect right. them to be unbiased, to be fair. You know, it's probably hard to be, and it's probably hard to stay silent while this shit goes on, but trust, I know y'all don't want to look into the allegations and y'all don't want to hear these guys get their side of the story. Y'all talk about victims and people having voices and people needing to talk, but they don't want to see that shit.
Right, when, but do you really mean it?
Yeah, they don't really mean it. People like that shit when they like it. I've said many times on the show, people's morality kind of stops and starts with, do I like this person?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that determines on what you're gonna let them get away with.
Michael Jackson's estate fights back after, against leaving Neverland with a documentary with a 24-page document full of quote-unquote truths that challenged the accuser's stories. Okay, let's see what these are. Okay. Apparently, the family's taking a step further, telling their side of the story with their truths. The Jackson family provided Billboard with a 24-page working PowerPoint document titled Leaving Neverland and the Truth that questions the accuser's memories and the filmmaker's motives in detail. The estate also attached recent news clips in which the singer's defense attorney called accusations hogwash. The document goes into detail about the documentary being biased and inconsistent and notes that the footage that was featured was quote-unquote misused. One of the examples the estate mentioned was when Robson says Jackson invited him to sleep in his bed, but in his deposition, the material states he makes clear that he and his sister were the ones that initiated the idea, and that Michael insisted they ask their parents. The film also portrays Jackson wishing Robson a happy birthday in a video suggesting a creepy predatory nanner, which he recorded numerous similar greetings around the same time, the estate says. Okay, no offense, none of that is proof that
he didn't do that. Shit.
None of that is truth, really. What you can say is his deposition contradicted what he's saying as a grown man.
Mm-hmm.
If you watch the documentary, he is aware of that and is telling you, as a kid, I actually was so enamored and groomed by this man and so like confused romantically as a child who should not be in a romantic relationship with a grown ass man. Mm-hmm. I relished the fact that I could go to trial and protect him.
Right.
So I could not wait to be the boy who was saying this did not happen.
Mm-hmm.
What I find ironic is that these same fucking people would be like that 13-year-old girl that was on a videotape with R. Kelly, who then got in the courtroom and said, that's not me on the tape. Y'all would be like, well, she lied because she's groomed by him and she's still with him to this day. Y'all would say that. So how can you not see it here? It's from his own voice. He is telling you. You don't have to assume anything. This is what the fuck happened. No, I'm gonna take your word as an 11-year-old child over you as a grown ass man. You clearly know nothing now. You know, even the idea that this is for some type of money and shit. Michael Jackson actually did pay off somebody a long time ago to avoid trial. A lot of money, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
These men are grown. Michael Jackson is dead. What money? They not suing the estate?
No,
not that there would be anything wrong with that, by the way. I don't, like, a lot of people had this shit completely confused. If I can't get criminal justice against a motherfucker, I will sue them for every penny I can get. Because I'm going to make them hurt. Fuck them. I don't owe them shit. Never understood that mentality. You're just trying to get some money. Yeah, like all the other rich rape victims. Where are they at? Point them out.
Come on.
Where they at, y'all? Fuck out of here. Just the fact that people have taken money from like Harvey Weinstein that still ended up being like, I'm going to sue you. Bill Cosby, I'm going to sue you. You paid me to be silent. I actually don't want to be silent. I'm glad you lied so that I could get on the stand and go, this man's a rapist. Like, but people try to reduce it to just some money. Well, I got the money. I could just quit right now. I could ask for some more money. They never say, they never turn around and charge these people with extortion and put them in jail, do they? Cause they not asking for no fucking money. But facts don't matter when you like somebody. It's just crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Also, so I know you're like, okay, what's the rest of the truths? 24 pages, PowerPoint truths that clearly expose these guys' liars, right?
Mm-hmm.
The document is not available to the public.
What?
Right.
Well, then you ain't got 24 PowerPoint pretty colors, 20, you know, picture shit, you know, with background music, PowerPoint presentation then. What are we talking about here?
The document is not available to
Then it don't fucking matter to the public. The public don't give a fuck if they can't read it.
But you got the proof.
The lies! The lies!
You got the proof, though. Now, I got the proof right here. I just can't show nobody. You know, it's just, I mean, he dead. So, if the state is so gung-ho to protect this man's legacy, you would think if they had, I would just feel like if I had incontrovertible, whatever, if I had proof that was so solid, it would prove all this shit is made up and my homie, my brother, my son, my whatever is completely exonerated, and all I have to do is simply put it out, 24 pages of PowerPoint. Guess what I would do, y'all?
Somebody would find a way to magically get it out there.
Yeah, right. So, but okay, y'all keep people, but see, that's the other thing though. This hits at the real point of this. People believe what they want to believe.
Agreed.
So there's gonna be people walking around like, see, I told y'all, they got proof. Okay, did you read the article? They got 24 pages of proof. The truth is out there. Just look it up for yourself.
I'll be like, but
okay,
we don't have the 24 points.
Right. Got it. Bishop Talbert Swan says Pastor John Gray is lying about his emotional affair.
Oh, this the dude we've been talking about for a while, bought his wife that car and having an affair. Now they doing that retreat.
That is who we've been talking about, Karen.
I'm glad John, I remembered.
John Gray is the guy, the pastor with the emotional affair. He said it was not physical, it was an emotional affair. Well, it looks like it's gonna be some drama in the church because Bishop Talbert Swan is saying that Pastor John Gray is a goddamn lie when he claimed he had just had an emotional affair with a strange woman. Swan wrote on Twitter earlier today, "Don't let your husband tell you it was an emotional affair and I never touched her after a year-long relationship that included hotel stays, shopping sprees, out-of-the-country trips, paying bills, I love you voicemails, and buying her a BMW. He's lying." The tweet also included a link to Pastor John Gray's story. Oh, he is spilling all the church tea.
Spilling all the communion wine.
Listen, he was out here like, I don't really give a fuck what y'all think. I know that this nigga is a lie and the word needs to be put out on this man. He is lying to you, sis.
Mm-mm, spilling all the wine.
Ooh, okay. Now that's shaking the table.
No, we not spilling the communion juice. We knocking over the communion wine and eating on the body of Christ.
Mhm. He was like,
cuz the truth, I'm gonna tell the truth.
Right. He came prepared. Like, he's like, I know the rest of y'all think that this is a game, but your boy came prepared with all the facts and all the receipts.
Tell the truth. Tell the truth.
Mm-hmm. And we gonna be like, no, we ain't doing them little dry wafers they give you. We breaking off the bread from the body. Mm-mm. We getting the real deal, y'all.
An emotional affair.
Nigga, please.
Ah!
Swan, in addition, the woman who claims to be that strange woman did an interview with Larry Reed. Allegedly, she knew Gray for 2 decades before he supposedly pursued her. The woman, who chose to remain anonymous at one point, said in the interview she ran into financial issues that snowballed into, I just love you so much, I always loved you, I always thought about you, I always cared about you. Then he was going through stuff with his wife and he was saying how he didn't like her, didn't love her, and that he was never attracted to her, that he only married her because she looked good on paper. His exact words, she don't suck, she don't fuck, she ain't never washed a pair of my drawers. So this is said, what is the star though? Video unavailable. Oh, I gotta watch it on YouTube. Okay, well, let's try that again. Damn, compared to what he said about the topic in January, so he changed. Okay, let me all right, let's get to the bottom of this. First, let's go to the YouTube interview portion of the church tea.
Okay. On next episode of the church's tea,
right? The church tea, the communion juice.
So on next episode of communion wine,
Larry Reed. So is Larry Reed like a church, like talk show or something? Do y'all know what this is? You know what I mean? Like, is this something that's been going on for a while with the, like, he do church stuff, or is he just like a regular talk show host and he just happened to get into church's business this time? All right, let me see.
It's not easy, but they're having to do it in front of the whole world.
Let me get to the part where I think it said 115. So I'm gonna skip for a little bit. Okay, that's 108. What about here? Where is this? 113. So it gotta be around
here. But yeah, he went and found old girl. He said, I got a PowerPoint presentation and it's one person.
Just, you don't want to have no job, you want Larry really live to go up in flames? I fear rebuttal because I know how a woman really, or a person really want to believe the best, but you have to pay a darn attention. Pay a darn attention. Then after you hear what this girl is saying, because we can't just hear one side of the Avenger, only thing you've heard is what he said. You haven't even talked to the girl. And today you say you don't even want to see her, and it's not important to see her. She wants security. She wants to believe her husband. She wants to do the work of the Lord. She also wants to continue to drive nice cars and live in nice stuff. Like she said in the thing, that's one of their commonalities was cars. And she can tell you when a car about to change the body shape and everything, but how many years that like she really into cars. But you guys, I'm just going to play it. It's a 3-hour initial conversation, December the 30th, that I had with the mistress. Only me had this conversation. And I have all of the audio from our conversations. This is just the initial conversation. You're going to hear her.
Oh, he gonna make
and
this
also
a,
her friend.
He going to make this a whole true crime podcast.
Come on. Come on. Come on. He the Holy Ghost TMZ. What is happening here?
Holy Ghost TMZ. He go, it's going to be Church Town season 3.
Come on, Church Town.
Get some character witnesses.
That was on the line with me, who was in the midst of this, along with Baby Jakes and his legal representative or somebody that owned his admin staff. They were all in this. But listen to this conversation, 20 minutes, listen carefully, because then we're going to talk and I'm going to open up the lines. Let's go.
I've known him for a very, 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 very half of my life.
So when was the last time y'all were frickin'?
What?
Was it summer?
Wait. Did he just go on YouTube and first he was like, darn, gosh darn, you got to be the darn truth.
Right?
This about the pastor. And then he said, when was the last time y'all was fucking? Let's just get right into the tea.
Hey, don't he sound like that dude that talked to the people after the on the shows? What is that white dude? Oh, he do them shows. Terry Crews was on there. He asked him a question. What is that dude's name?
Watch What Happens Live.
Right.
Yeah.
Is this
a black man.
No, this is a black man. What's his version? Watch What Happened Church?
I guess. Watch What's Happened Live. Choir edition. Good grief. When the last time y'all was fucked?
Well, that's when everything stopped.
Yeah, that's when everything stopped. It's the beginning of summer.
Oh, because it was like June. That was a man. So.
See, my friend is going through a hard breakup, a fucked up divorce. He was mainly there for her.
And he was the one. See, what happened was it started with him just, he likes to say, breathing life into me. And so he was just, you know, there as far as just, you know, my situation, just talking to me, pretty much pastoring me, ministering to me or whatever, and, you know, just that. And I called on him to do a favor for a person that I knew that was struggling with some addiction issues. And so I called upon him to help with that. It was an employee of mine. And that employee actually wound up speaking with him, and they talked for a good amount of time, and it got him like straight on the straight and narrow or whatever. And then so I just sent him a text message telling him thank you, you know, because I seen a difference in my employee and whatever else. And he said, you know, whatever, basically whatever you need, you know, whatever. And then I was like, well, thank you. I was like, he really needed. He was like, I'm talking about you. And so.
Keep that door open.
Yeah, so that,
okay, now wait, hold up.
This must be a three-way.
Who else on this call?
I don't know. Her friend, because it sounds like two women and him.
Yeah. Man, this is crazy.
I ran into an issue financially, and so he was just like, absolutely. And it was a big deal. It was a really big thing. From that moment on, like, he would just, it started from there. It just snowballed into, you know, I just love you so much. I always loved you. I always cared about you. I always thought about you. I always this and always that. And then he was going through the stuff with his wife and then telling me about how much he did not like her, that he was in love with her, that he was never attracted to her, that she...
That's always the story, by the way. You can't really believe no married man that is shitting on his wife to talking about how he's fucking you.
He 9 times out of 10, he ain't gonna leave her.
How does that not, like, send a red flag up to you that this nigga is in a whole ass marriage with a person he claims he doesn't love, isn't attracted to, never liked, all this shit?
But he committed, right? He shows that he can commit.
But somebody was telling, like, he telling you the same shit he told her one day.
They don't care.
Right? Like, at some point he was telling her that she, you think she was sitting around like, I know he doesn't like me, love me, doesn't da-da-da-da, doesn't, you know, I just need to have these kids and get married to him and let him be in my house every night. Like, nah. At one point he was nice to her too.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's pulling that shit on you. Wow.
Only married her because she looked good on paper. He said that he was, his exact words was, she ain't never sucked, she don't suck, she don't fuck, she don't do, she don't even clean my, she ain't never washed a pair of my drawers. He told me how much he paid in child care for the kids that weren't even school age, but she could have actually stayed home to, you know, actually take care of the kids, but they got like two nannies, and he complained about that, and he complained about, and he told me that he was, basically he led me on to believe that he was going to leave her because he was telling me he was tired of living, his exact words was, I'm tired of being behind this mask.
Yeah, with it though, right?
He not leaving all that motherfucking money.
Honey, they done be like, the devil is a lie, hold my hand, and honey, let's preach the gospel to these other brokenhearted folks.
Yeah, he not leaving all that money. That's how he make his money. His image with his wife and all that shit. Of course he gonna go up there and cry and save it for when you go public. Nah, he was feeling.
The devil was a lie. That's what I heard him say.
That's what he was like. Let me get my story out first.
All right, well, I'm gonna stop listening to this part and go back to the article, but she was spilling all of it. In case you missed it, Gary Gray went on The Real, and he told the women earlier this month, well, I can play the clip. Let me see if I can unmute this shit.
Did you have an affair, and if so, when did it start?
The answer is no, I didn't. But over a year ago, over a year ago, my wife and I were in a very difficult place in our marriage.
Now, I don't know them. Is that his wife next to him?
I began to converse with someone other than a counselor, other than a pastoral leader, which is where I should have taken my issues and challenges and began to converse. And I was even in the presence of that person one time. But being in the presence of someone is not the same as sleeping with them. I did not sleep with anyone. There's no baby. There's none of that. And so it's important for me to take responsibility for the areas where I did come up short. Okay. Sharing things about my marriage outside of my wife and outside of trusted counselors is an emotional affair. It was wrong. I take responsibility for that. But I will not take responsibility for that which I did not do. As a pastor, it's important for people to know that when I get up in that pulpit, I come not as a perfect man, but as a broken man, which is why we talked about these very things at the first sermon of our church.
Right.
People act like this is something, you know, brand new, but we've walked through this. We have peace, but people don't.
Yeah.
So, again, this the genesis of this was over a year ago, but we talked about this in May at our church, and so we're moving forward. We're believing God that this will be an opportunity for other people to heal. Yeah. But I do want to set that record straight.
Okay, so that was his account of it.
So then this was him, I guess, last year, or no, January, where he confessed to having cheated on his wife on a different show. Man, they had to do a cheating tour.
The whole cheating tour. The whole cheating tour.
So I want to share this video with you of Pastor John Gray and Abinter Gray sharing with their congregation. This is the very
okay. That's when he actually said it on the
in front of the congregation.
Okay, I'll just read this because we played this before.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, let's see. Oh, he also said, "There's no baby, none of that. It's important for me to take responsibility in the areas I did come up short, sharing things about my marriage, outside my wife, blah blah blah." Okay, so then. In January, he had said, "We had to keep smiling because even though we were struggling, even though I was failing as a husband, I was already in front of the people, and the people can't really receive my brokenness because where do leaders go when they bleed? So I had to bleed alone, and that's what's strange, is I traveled the whole world, and the Holy Ghost showed up, and people got saved, and me and my wife just kept smiling, and nobody knew we were ready to get a divorce, because as long as I kept producing, nobody cared what was happening at home. I started listening to the wrong voices and letting people get too close. She found out, and she set it off, just like a good wife should." Yeah, Aventer then grabbed the microphone and said, "And then I prayed for them and him, and then the devil loses, because that's what's not going to happen is you tell me I'm going to lose my purpose because someone whispered to a 16-year-old John, the devil is a lie. I'm standing with my husband, and you can go on the back to the pits of hell where you came from. Was I upset? Yes. Was I heartbroken? Yes. But you better learn how to get in there for the what's the vows, better and worst. So when the worst shows up, you don't run away." She later shouted, "I put scripture on that strange woman. I put scripture on that strange woman. She don't want it with me. She don't want it with y'all. Amen." Sound like a threat. Gray then received criticism for buying his wife a Lamborghini in December, but I guess since he bought the mistress a car, it's only fair play. No, it's all guys' money anyway. So yeah, you believe him? It was just a spiritual, emotional affair, and there's no sex involved, no babies, none of that type of stuff.
Coming from her, from the woman, that don't sound like.
So you don't believe him?
Cause it's two sides, like you say. Ain't nobody asking her nothing. Everybody yeah. acting like she don't exist.
That's a good point, Karen. I personally don't believe him. So, I mean, he said what he said, but I don't think that's the truth. I think he was fucking, and I'm more prone to believe that he was lying and saying his wife ain't shit and trying to fuck this woman or fucking this woman. And, you know, at what point, like, what reason does she have to lie at this point?
Right, right. What is her benefit from that?
You know, she's not extorting him for anything.
Mm-mm. She not suing. She not going after a dime.
Let's see what else happens. Joe Biden, they released like a statement saying that him and his advisors were debating Stacey Abrams as an out-of-the-gate vice president choice. Close advisors to Vice President Joe Biden are debating the idea of packaging his presidential campaign announcement with a pledge to choose Stacey Abrams as his vice president.
Has she put her hat in the ring yet and said she's going to run?
Not for president.
Okay.
The popular Georgia Democrat who at age 45 is 31 years younger than Biden would bring diversity and excitement to the ticket, showing voters, in the words of a close source, that Biden isn't just another old white guy. But the decision poses considerable risk, and some advisors are flatly opposed. Some have pointed out that in a Democratic debate, he could be asked why no one on the stage would be a worthy running mate. Advisors also know that the move would be perceived as a gimmick. Biden's position on the issue couldn't be learned. We were just told about the advisors debate. Biden has discussed selecting a running mate early, a move that one senior Democrat said could hurt him by feeding an air of inevitability. Biden's office declined to comment. Abrams and Biden did meet in Washington last week to discuss her next political steps. Biden requested the lunchtime meeting. So maybe they've already discussed this, and this is a thing that, you know, she's aware of and approves of. I don't know. What do you think about it?
Just put like this. because nobody knows what the future gonna hold, wait till you get there, because it's like you almost jumping the gun, almost like you automatically know that you're gonna make it out of 100 people running right now. You don't know. You don't know who might actually come out the woodworks and surpass you and actually might be a better candidate than you. You don't know. So when you do this, you cause a lot of rifts in the water, because you have a lot of black people that go that's hoping that she throws her hat in the ring. They don't know. They hope that she does. Mm-hmm. And so people are going, well, why would you even say this? And you don't even know she's going to throw a hat in the ring. And then if she does, let's say she decides to throw her hat in the ring, a lot of people going, it's going to be a problem, because a lot of people say, well, he said he ever going to pick you for vice president anyway. Like, what the fuck? And my thing is that I might be wrong, but I think that strategically, from his perspective, from Biden's, it's actually a smart move. I understand that. Because your base is black women, like, you know, so you go, well, I'm going to get somebody that I know that the largest percentage of voters voted like a 90 something percent clip. I want to get something to cater towards these people. That's understandable. But at the same time, I think there's a possibility that she could actually beat him. Mm-hmm. Like she might actually fuck around to be a better candidate and actually beat him, you know, if they was to run head to head. And I think he realizes that too. So I think this is a kind of a plan to kind of take her off the board ahead of time, or be like, no, not this time, you can run next time. You know, it's some strategical plan in here. Like I said, I don't really like it, but it's just me personally.
Yeah, my thing is this. I don't think she's running for president. Like, I mean, she hasn't really put any fillers out there. I think she may feel that it's too early. She's actually still working in Georgia on that voter registration and voter suppression stuff. I don't think she's going to run. I think that's what the meeting was for, to say, are you going to run for president? She must have said, I'm really looking forward to him. Like, if she just starts saying complimentary things about him, then we would all go, okay, maybe they're working on something. If she's at some campaign events with him, we go, okay, yeah, if this guy's running, this is going to be his VP. There's a much more savvy way to run, to trot this out there than the, we were mulling it over and we might be kind of thinking about
possibly. People mull a lot of shit over. They don't put it out publicly, though.
Yeah, and if she were to run, as with all these candidates, I'm a little hesitant for all of them to run, but at the same time, I want all of them to run. So if she were to run, I'd be cool with that. I can't wait to see who the fuck comes out the primary. I'm going to support the shit out of that person, and I really don't give a fuck what anybody says about it. Once it's them versus Trump, I don't care which of these candidates it is.
Same.
They are going to get the support I would give anyone versus Trump. Mm-hmm. But I would love to see her try it out. The thing I worry about is there's so many people in the field at this point. I don't even know what's supposed to separate everybody from each other. And I worry about, at least in the online sphere, how many people are tacitly supportive of her as an idea. But once she becomes an individual who's running, they will then yank that support back and start telling me all the negative things about her. Because there's been several candidates like that where people were not as vocal about their shortcomings until they decided to run, and especially if they get like some traction. You know, Beto is one of those people that people were mostly positive about, and then he said, I'm running for president, and then people start saying, you can't say you're born for this. Who the fuck is, if you are trying to run for president, you have some arrogance about you. I don't believe in this shit of, I'm going to be the president of the United States and change the free world, blah, blah, blah. But I'm not arrogant about it. I'm not going to, like, brag on myself. Like, no, you probably do feel called to it. They knew what he meant, but they tried to nitpick that shit. You know, obviously, Kamala Harris's prosecutorial record. Mm-hmm. Joe Biden and you know, Anita Hill and the crime bill, which he authored. You know, there's just obviously Bernie Sanders and his milquetoast racial background, and he marched with King and did nothing for 50 years, but hey, you guys should just remember that he got arrested once. Like, that, like, all of these dudes and women have motherfucking holes in their shit. Elizabeth Warren and her Pocahontas shit that Trump has put on her, in addition to actual proof that she did do some of that shit.
I think Gillibrand has like some racist shit that she said a long time ago. There's a woman out of the Midwest, I can't remember her fucking name, but she's mean. Klobuchar, she's mean to all her employees and shit like that. Like, all of these motherfuckers got something. The Cory Booker is just the most not, like, he's the squarest, most nonchalantest ass dude. Like, could not see him possibly on the debate stage with Donald Trump winning. Could mm-hmm. not see it. Mm-hmm. Like, just he's like Obama with less savvy and wit. So there's all this stuff where I can see something wrong with each candidate, and yet everyone's always clamoring for another person to enter the race, and then they do, and then we get to find out what's wrong with them. So we'll see what happens with that. I just think the rollout of that information was just not smart.
Nope.
Let's see what else happened. A man got arrested for allegedly throwing a glass of water on the racist ass Steve King. He's a representative out of Iowa. Okay. White nationalist.
Okay, because you know, I was gonna be like, who?
Yeah, you've heard of him before because he says a lot of racist shit. So anyway, somebody threw some water on him, 26-year-old Blake Gibbons, and he got arrested for it. Because you're not really supposed to be able to do that. It's kind of like Egg Boy thing where he did it, and we'll see what happens to him. I mean, it is technically assault. You now put this man in a position where he gets to be the one that's petty about pressing charges and shit like that. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens. So, but I definitely don't feel bad for Steve King.
Not a tear.
You won't see him falling down my eyes. Because that does not bother me. All right, let's see what else we got here. Experts say even successful couples have these 7 incompatible traits.
Oh shit.
Even the successful couples, guys, okay? There's a lot of stuff going on out here.
And everybody has a different definition of success, but okay.
If you think you need to be exactly like your partner in order to have a successful relationship, think again. While it may require more understanding and ability to compromise, being different is actually a good thing, and this includes bringing traits to the table that are technically incompatible. When you approach life from different angles, you might find that you and your partner have had an easier time of solving problems since you're both offering your own unique perspectives. Let me just get to the shit.
Right?
Good grief.
Fucking worried. Get to the point.
Number one, relax versus uptight. If one partner is laid back, go with the flow type of person, you may not expect them to have much success with someone who's more strict and structured, but this can in many ways make for a very healthy relationship. Yeah, I think so too. Cause sometimes you need a calming influence to the uptight person. And sometimes it switches back and forth, but you know, I think a lot of people don't understand that you can exacerbate a situation and someone's anxieties and all this stuff by actually jumping in and almost like making it worse or trying to escalate it. So like if Karen's having a problem with customer service on the phone, and then I jump on the phone and I start yelling at customer service and I start yelling with Karen and we're both yelling, like that's not necessarily an ideal situation a lot of times.
No.
Now all our blood pressure is up, all our anxiety is up.
Right, everybody else. Yeah. Because that's the thing, we kind of go back and forth because you're really laid back, and the thing about me, I'm laid back too. I really, really, really am. But it's like I got a line, and once that line is crossed, or once I feel like I'm not getting what I requested, or once I feel like, because my thing, I used to be too laid back, like way laid back. Well, you'd be like, but Karen, you call and nothing happened. You was actually just being too nice to the right people. So I'm like, okay, I got to find a balance, and I could actually go to the other extreme.
Yeah, but my point is like in a couple, you know, in the house, you're trying to, or not, I shouldn't say yeah, but I mean, yeah. And my point is in a house with a couple, with two people or whatever, how many people you have in your relationship, you know, there has to be a balancing act to get back to like
to neutral.
Yeah. Because it can't always be like, we are just on the same page and I amp you up when you're sad. I'm sad as you are. I'm out sad in you. I'm out angry in you, or I'm trying to match your anger. Like that's not always the right response, and sometimes that balance is what helps. It's not, you know, as long as it's not abusive or it's not a person like right. being ignoring your, like, oh, you mad, like they're not mocking you or being right. like, what the fuck you mad about, or
being cruel,
right? Yes. But it's that they can be supportive without joining you in that. Sometimes you need that balance. I know there was a thing last year when I was ready to go like ape, like I was about to fucking burn it all down last year
to the ground.
You know, between Karen and some good friends of mine, like talking me down, it was, I'm glad they didn't just match my shit, because I would have burned the shit down. I would have been up here talking shit about everybody. So, you know, you need that sometimes. Number two, organized versus messy. Man, this one's more of a struggle, I think. Cause organized people really, you know, have more of a struggle with, you know, the idea of messy, because it, to me, it also equals work. So I know people call about emotional labor in the first one, but I'm not a huge believer in emotional labor. Is a very nebulous concept that changes from relationship to relationship, and a lot of people start talking about that when they don't like somebody or something, or when, you know, like, or that when they just kind of want to talk about the things they do in a relationship but not the things the other person does. I'm not a correct. Huge fan of that, but mm-hmm. this is labor,
right? And in my mind, I can deal with a little bit of dirt. Like, I know my personality. If you're a neat fanatic, we're not going to get along, because my mama was a neat fanatic, and that shit irritated the fucking fuck out of me. Why? I'm like, I'm not getting paid for this. Why am I doing this? Nobody, I'm not getting a 401k, no paycheck, no, you're not paying me. Well, this shit is optional when I fucking feel like it.
Well, my thing is, when people don't do that part around the house, though, somebody always ends up picking up the slack. So,
correct.
If you refuse to do dishes, guess what that means? Now I have to do the dishes. Or, you know, as the neater person or whatever. And it can cause a lot of conflict. My dad's very neat. And I know he used to just stay on our ass about cleaning up and shit. And I think, you know, somebody not being, you know, being with a person who's very organized and you being messy, you don't catch the same stress. The stress you get is them being like, why didn't you clean this up? Why didn't you fix this?
Right.
But that's not the same level of stress as, well, I guess I have to be the one to mop the floor because nobody else will do it, and they just don't even see the need, you know?
Right, and to an extent, it has to be a balance there, because the thing about people that are like clean fanatics like that, some of them will express it, but sometimes you have to communicate properly. Like, a lot of those people be like, why don't you do it? All you're doing is making the other person mad. Like,
well, they wait till they're about to explode to say it. But that's normally after they've already done all this labor of cleaning your shit up. So they come in with a, you know, emotional explosion as opposed to a gentle nudge. And not to mention, many times the neat person does gently nudge the person.
Correct.
And it just doesn't matter. You know, I know one of the things I used to do as passive aggressive is, like, Karen would leave a bunch of clothes on the ground on her side of the bed, and so I would just go put the fucking hamster over there, like, and I wouldn't say nothing or talk no shit, but it'd be like, put your shit in the hamster. Like, I bought these hampers.
Use them.
I bought these clothes hampers. I have, like, five of them sitting around the house at this point.
They're everywhere.
They're literally everywhere.
Why are you missing them?
Why would you just throw clothes on the side of the bed? And, you know, at one point, you know, Karen, it got so bad. I actually bought her a little cubby hole for her clothes on her side of the bed, in addition to the drawers and stuff we have over there. Like, so just to be like, here's extra space for your clothes so you don't just throw them on the ground. And, you know,
you've gotten better.
Yes. But, you know, the point being, like, rather than wait till I'm about to, like, explode and be like, why the fuck won't you pick up your clothes? You know, as if you're a child or something, because we're both adults.
Correct.
So instead, I like put that shit over there, because it's just a little nudge, a little reminder, like, yo, put your stuff up, you know. And then Karen always walks back into the other room, like, why you put the clothes hamster by the bed? I'm like, you know what it means. Like, come on now.
Like, we quit being unreasonable.
Like, I don't want to fight about it, but it's clear, it's obvious that you want me to wash and dry these clothes for you anyway.
Right.
Like,
right,
do your part and put them in the basket. You know, it's easy. Or fold them and put them in a drawer, or hang them up like I do. So, and I'm not a neat freak. So, but the point being, like, that being said, it's also bigger than just cleaning up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because that energy matters. The organized energy which brings rigid like structure to the relationship, you know, to other tasks like I balance my checkbook, digital register every day, you know, I pay all the bills, that type of stuff, right? I'm always on top of that stuff. Well, that right, Karen also brings the energy of the creativity sometimes to life, where Karen's like, we should do a live show, we should try this with the podcast, we should, so there's energy also that you don't want to stifle. Like, I don't want to be like, yo, messy ass, blah blah blah, and now you're feeling like you're trapped in a box, you know. So I want you to still have that energy to be like, you know, what about this choice, what about doing this thing, you know.
Yeah, and the thing is, like you say, it is a balance, because like I said, it's one of those things where I go, okay, yeah, I do need to hang this, I do need to fold this. And my thing is one of those things where like you said, I pick up on clues, I go, oh, okay, I go ahead and do it. But like I say, I won't let it escalate to the point to where the other person is exploding, because that's where that not balance comes in, and that's where the arguments comes in.
Well, also, like, that's just certain people. Like, my dad is more of an exploder. Like, yeah. he does whatever the thing is that is annoying to him, and then one day he's just like, I have done the dishes 75 times in a row and nobody's done shit about it, what the fuck is wrong with y'all, blah blah blah. I don't want to be like that, so right. I try to be like the first time, the second time, like, right. Hey, so you really gonna just leave these clothes over here? What's
and,
up?
And that's my thing. I rather you talk and communicate and things like that, because the thing is, the person that is exploding, you're talking to another human being that is not going to respond well, right, with you exploding. So they're going to match your level when you start yelling at them. And particularly if you haven't just flat come out and told them sometimes, they're going to be like, what the fuck? I did not know. You didn't tell nobody. You didn't mention anything. You didn't say anything. You know, sometimes they do, but it's just for the fact that they might go, well, I didn't know it was as important as you stated. Like, you didn't tell me the importance of this.
Communication is key.
Correct.
Spontaneous versus scheduled. Believe it or not, when a spontaneous person coexists with a more structured person, it can make for quite the healthy match. For example, if one is a planner, the other is spontaneous, the planner takes care of all the last minute details, while the other takes the lead when it comes to creating a looser schedule overall and having fun. Yeah, I could see that. Type A versus type B personalities. Type A is ambitious, hardworking, competitive. Type B is more relaxed and flexible. While it's always possible for two type A's to be together, two type B's, opposites can also attract.
I go between A and B. It just depends on what the situation is for me. And just like the one before, I kind of go back and forth between those things. Like, yeah. I can kind of morph, because to me, it depends on the situation, because a lot of times, in certain situations, you're the planner. In certain situations, I'm the planner. In certain situations, we're both like, fuck it. Whatever happens, happens.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, these are very flexible definitions. We don't have to ascribe strictly to any of them, I guess.
Mm-mm.
And I guess if you're more of the extreme, you know, you're the ones that have to deal with that stuff.
Correct.
Internal versus external processors. Oh, yeah, this is a big one. Some people internally process things and they kind of come to you when they have a conclusion. And then some people like to talk it through until they get to a conclusion. Once again, neither is strict. You can be both and all that stuff. But I definitely think this is a big one for me, because people that internally process things and then don't clue you into how they're working things out or through, sometimes that can bother me, because I'm like, I want to know, like, what are you thinking? How are you getting there? How are we going to arrive there? I want to be part of the process. But at the same time, I'm an internal processor in a lot of ways, but I just think I express myself better, and I don't mind expressing myself through the thinking. Like, I won't do the thing. What I'm saying is, I don't like when people shut down conversation and communication and then come back later. I know some people, that's their thing. Like, I need time to process this. I'll talk to you after I've thought about this. I'm more of a, like, I want to work it out with you and talk it through right now. And if you need time, we'll get to that too.
Yeah, and
it's the call, Karen. Hold on. The ghetto. All right. So that was the phone call. So what were you saying, Karen? I'm sorry. We're talking about internal versus external processes.
Yes. When it comes to that, how can I say it? Because the way I was raised, my mama, she's kind of an internal type of person to the extent where it's not even helpful sometimes, in my opinion. Because like there's no communication. She just come like, this is it, and you're like, okay, how did you get there? You know what's going on? It's like, nope, I said what I said at the end. And you're like, okay. Sometimes that could be very frustrating to somebody that likes an explanation. But as a child, I kind of picked up on that, and I think that you kind of challenged me to process things differently. And I think that I have a personality where I talk it out. Like, that's what I do. And sometimes for people to internalize things, particularly just a sex thing, when a woman is talking to a man a lot of times, and a woman is actually has the type of personality where she just likes to talk it through, because men are kind of coaching them as an early age to problem solve. And so they hear you talking and they want to give you an answer. And sometimes you don't want an answer. You just want to be able to verbally talk it out loud. Because for me, when I talk out loud, I process. I'm going through the motions. My mind is ticking. Everything's kind of floating around. I'm able to absorb things. And if you want to add to the conversation, I can bounce off of what you're saying, but I'm kind of walking my way through it. And a lot of times, there's been times where I've gotten to the end. I go, okay, that's what I'm going to do. You know, right. Versus kind of keeping it inside and racking around in my brain, which I can do that too, but I just like to verbally talk it out.
Yeah, I think, that's a huge thing. It's a huge learning curve for a lot of people. And, mm-hmm. and women aren't the only ones like that. I mean, there's a lot of men that do that too, but I think also, processing is difficult because sometimes it does feel like, oh, this person's asking me for a solution or to help or for advice. And it's hard to discern. And it's also hard sometimes for the person to discern what they want. Because it's almost like if you could preface this thing with, I want to talk about this situation, but I'm not looking for advice and I'm not looking for a solution, then you may get a better response from people. Now, right. I think what the other part is, sometimes people are bothered by the fact that someone's like, well, then I don't want to participate in this conversation.
Right.
You know, this might be the 17th time you've talked about your mama, and I don't want to talk about, you know, you and your mama's problems 17 times in a row. Knowing that you're not going to change anything, you don't want to hear any solutions, you don't want to do anything different. So it's almost like a one-sided conversation. You need a therapist, not a friend, you know.
Yes, don't abuse. Right.
So I could see that too, but I think in general, you know, you have to be there for people to help them process it. And in a romantic relationship, you're gonna kind of get in that role sometimes where they're just talking. And yeah, I'm not a fan of the I process this, meaning I've thought about this and now I no longer will accept any input or any different discussion on it. Literally, that's the absolute opposite of how I am, and like the worst type of person for me to be around. I really do not like people that are like, I've come to a conclusion and anything you say or do does not matter to me. Well, then fuck you, because I don't want to be, if we don't matter to each other that much, then I just don't be around me.
Right. And you're not willing to at least hear my input and hear what I got to say, because I may have a completely different perspective or might challenge you to think about things in a way that you didn't even consider. Because a lot of times people fail to realize your lack of experience or your lack of dealing with certain situations may, and also sometimes your privilege may, you may come to a conclusion based off of that. And then you have somebody else go, hey, have you ever thought about it this way? Well, what about this way? Have you ever considered this way? Well, what about the feelings of this and that and the other? And you go, oh, okay. I understand where you're coming from. I'm still going to make this decision, but at least now I have a different perspective versus you just shutting the conversation down. Because like I say, most of the time you do internalize, but every now and then it might be something where you might actually talk to me about it. And because I'm that's my personality, I'm more able to work with you through it.
Yeah. I'm a kind of person that, you know, I might feel like I come to a conclusion, but I always leave it open, because you just never know. You might change your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Shit might,
situations might change. Right.
You get angry at one point, you're not as angry later.
Right. Because a lot of times when you're talking out of just raw emotions, particularly when you're angry, everything you come, everything you say is coming from that point of anger. And like you say, once you calm down, once you process it, once you work through that anger, you can get to the other emotions, which is sometimes empathy and sympathy and compassion and understanding. But when you're angry, none of those emotions matter to a lot,
like,
of people.
You know, one of the things that weirds me out is people that say, like, and I kind of figured out why, but people that are like, I'm petty, I'm teen petty, or I never forgive. I think one of the reasons it bothers me is because it's so antithetical to my being to be the same level of upset forever. And but when those people say that, what they kind of mean is like, I am going to be this level of angry or upset or whatever about this thing for the rest of my life. And I'm like, and one, you know, maybe they will be, but for the most part, I don't think people really can keep up that emotional intensity forever.
Human beings don't function like
for
that.
The most part. I mean, there's some that do, you know. Obviously we've met some where we're like, oh, that motherfucker's fucked up,
right?
But then the other thing is, if you're gonna be mad forever at this level, it makes me feel more like you're just mad all the time.
Correct.
And this just happens to be another thing you can pour that anger into, but you're just mad all the time. Like, something else is the problem, but you've turned it into, it's really about blank. But no, it's not. Older and younger. I mean, I think that's a pretty easy one. I mean, there's age differences all the time. People can make it work, you know, through all kinds of different reasons. So, you know, I could see why that wouldn't be a deal breaker, and why that might actually make some stuff better, depending on the, you know, what you're into.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that has its pluses and its minuses.
Yeah, like all of these. And spenders versus savers. And that one makes sense too, although I think you kind of, you definitely going to have, see, one of the things about spending versus saving is that there's very few people that in America where you're going to have the luxury to really save.
Come on.
So we're talking about, for a lot of people, they're spenders by necessity, not because of, like, I just choose to be a spender. It's like, look, after rent and the bills come through, ain't nothing to save.
Ain't nothing to save.
Like, I can
dog.
Treat myself like a human being and maybe catch a movie every once in a while.
Go out to eat every now and then.
Right. Or I can put that, you know, $60 a month in some type of savings account, and then the second that my tires go flat, it's gone anyway. You know, so I definitely can understand. I think that's more of a luxury thing now. Mm-hmm. Maybe it didn't used to be, with wage stagnation and debt and all this stuff, I think you're running into a lot less, like, we had the opportunity to save and I chose to say fuck you, you know?
Right, because when you talk about savings, people's savings are depleted. It's no longer there. It's just not there. You know, the safety net that they tell people to do, people are like, well, how can I do it when every fucking thing has gone up but my pay?
Yep. All right, let's get to some other stuff. Let me get to my Guess the Race playlist, and we can do some fucking with black people. Everybody loves that.
We're just fucking with black people.
That's right, guys. It's time to play the game we all hate to play. It's fucking with black people. The game, we go all around the globe. We find different articles that make us feel fucked with, and we assign point scores from 0 to 100 in intervals of 25. Today's contestants, everybody. All right, let's see who's back in the saddle. Mm-hmm. Plantation slaves were happy and musical, according to Louisiana's most visited historical site. Oh, Louisiana. A sign claiming slaves who once lived at Louisiana's most visited site were happy has finally been removed. Well, cool. 2019. An official exhibit, state-owned Rosedale Plantation, claimed the slaves lived happily there and showed a natural musical instinct, but historians agreed that painted an inaccurate picture of their lives.
You don't say.
I do say, my dear. Mm-hmm. Those happy musical slaves. Meanwhile, all the songs is codes to get to the north.
Come on.
Make a left by the tree. Go down the river. Go down the river, he go.
Come on.
Like, all the songs is, how the fuck do we get out of here? And they're like, they are so musical.
Mm-hmm. You give an instruction on how to build a boat. Get you some 2x4s and nail the hammer.
Right.
They go, woo, them Negroes can really sing. thing.
Master go to sleep about 10 every night. 10 every night. 10 every night.
Come on!
Brandon Burris, the Deputy Assistant Secretary of State Parks, called the sign a mistake and was not sure how long it had been hung in the detached kitchen exhibit.
That was not a mistake.
Official said state, right, that's not a mistake.
But they won't, been up for decades. Listen,
let me tell you something. In addition to the black kids who had to come see this exhibit, they're really thinking about the white kids that had to come see this exhibit. And what they want to tell you is that your slave owner ancestors were not bad people, and that slaves like being slaves. It is a huge piece of Southern history and propaganda to say that slaves like being slaves. That slavery was actually altruistic. And due to our savage African dark-skinned bestial nature, they gave us organization and taught us skills. And it's apparently the world's first internship. And the savage brutality of it all, the sexual assault of it all, the abuse of it all, the lack of freedom of it all, well, those are all done to benefit us, guys. So
to make us better human beings, we had to beat the savage out of you and teach you this good old Christianity.
The official said the state historians and park administrators did not agree with the sign's wording, which was based on a book written by Sarah Bowman, one of the last members of the family that built the plantation using slave labor in 1834. Well, yeah, let's let her tell the story. Did any slaves participate in the story? Oh, nope. Okay, cool. They always come up with, oh, it's a mistake, but no one's responsible, said Southern University professor Albert Samuels. I wish I could say I was shocked, but there's still a basic unwillingness to come to terms with the fact that slavery was an awful institution.
Mm-hmm. It depends on who you ask. Didn't you read an article or maybe a fan wrote in and said that they was covering like one of the plantations and white people like asked them the most fucking ridiculous questions?
Yeah, I read an article. Yeah,
right.
They were a tour guide at a slavery at a plantation and black historical thing, and white people would always ask them stuff like, "Were house happy? Were they happy slaves?" And
they would
like
no, and they would be getting mad at them and shit for like. What the fuck you think this was?
They've been brainwashed. When I say white people are victims of white supremacy, that's where it comes down to. Imagine being that brainwashed. You didn't even recognize something so simple.
It's called slavery. Slave. That's the part I don't get. Slave.
Yeah. Well, I guarantee if we examine both of our lives, there's something we take for granted that we don't understand because we have privilege. There's just certain shit that we were like, that's what that mean? You know what I mean? So like, they have that because there's an entire institution that has willfully taught them that, you know, I'll put it simply. To me now it's monstrous and ridiculous, but, and obviously it may not be as, complicit as like hate crimes and shit like that. But like in rap, in a culture for black men, there was a no homo phase.
Mm-hmm.
Where you basically are trying to say, I'm not gay. And it's funny that people would think that this is gay, or isn't gay being funny? Now it might not be the same as like me saying like it's happy slaves, but I thought that me saying no homo and my friend saying no homo and every rapper I listen to saying no homo and every message board I was on saying no homo and all that shit, there was a time in my life where I was just like, that doesn't mean they homophobic.
Okay.
So I'm conditioned to believe that shit. Because that is the experience I'm having. Meanwhile, I'm literally shaming. I'm really literally rewriting what masculinity has to be. I'm literally, essentially calling people that are gay weak and less than, and in a ridiculous affirmation of my own heterosexuality, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is a thing that, you know, where even as a joke. The joke is being gay is funny.
Right.
So I'm participating in that. I'm a smart person, relatively empathetic, all that shit, but I did not even, it never even really crossed my mind until later in that, you know, that era where I was like, wait, what's even really funny about this? You know what I mean? Like what's the target for this? Well, white people have been indoctrinated into white supremacy so early and so hard. Their ancestors are the white supremacists. Their ancestors are the slave owners. the same way that those guys smiled when they thought about when I'm a kid and Michael Jackson took interest in me, even though he was my abuser, you can see on their faces a latent memory of like, but it was a happy time except for the abuse. These white people love their families, their grandpa, their grandpas who they inherited the plantation where the slaves were at, and their grandpa who told them, well, my slaves are happy, I treated my slaves good. And they didn't say, well, let me go walk down there to the slave quarters and ask them what's going on. No. Grandpa gets to tell the narrative, and then he hands it to me, and it has to be the truth, because if it's less than the truth, then grandpa's a piece of shit. So it has to be the truth. So now I'm on a fucking plantation tour going, so how happy were the slaves here? What, I mean, isn't it true that slaves are happy? Being, they got food and they were treated well? So that's why it works that way. And I think if you examine your own privilege, you'll find something you take for granted that way. And it's how we become victims of sexism, anti-blackness, homophobia, transphobia. It's how we do it, is because it becomes so normalized, we start taking it for granted because we don't even examine it. And most white people will never pick up a book and learn about anything about slavery, period. They'll never do it. You know, the only thing they're ever going to learn about slavery is my grandpa said he treated slaves good, or, you know, the good masters was this, and there was occasionally a couple bad rotten eggs, but, you know, don't let that define all slavery for you. And we as black people know there's no illusion because we lived it. We're like, no, my grandmama told me the other stories. So I don't have the luxury of what I was told it was okay. You know, so I think there's a part of that that I think, that's why they end up kind of being robbed of the faculties to even process this information, because then they have to go through the entire lineage of their family and be like, my family are slave trading pieces of shit.
Yep. And also I think you just make me think about, like you said, the stories that I told, because like I say, we're told a completely different story. So that's why I'm like, the fuck, it's called goddamn slavery. Like, you took some, people were taking away from their land, and families was broken up. How was this happy? How was this joyous? What is so great about this? But then, like you say, it's one of those things where they have been brainwashed, and history is told through the people that won, quote unquote, or history is told by the people that have the privilege and the luxury of rewriting history. And whiteness and white supremacy has been allowed to rewrite history. You know, facts be damned. And because we're of the age now where majority of the people that were slaves, there are a handful that are alive, but most of them are gone away. And because most of them are gone away and dead and gone, you have generations of black people that are actually ashamed of slavery, feel bad about slavery, don't want to talk about slavery. So not only do you have the white children getting robbed, you also have the black children getting robbed from their history and knowing the truth about it too, because everybody quote unquote wants to feel ashamed about it.
Yeah. And honestly, there's no bigger proof that for centuries, and obviously to this day for some white people, that they have never felt kinship with us as humans.
No.
They've really felt we were a subspecies of animal. Like, they did not think we were the same as processing our emotions as them. It's the reason that our health outcomes are different with doctors, because they literally don't think we feel the same amount of pain and that our bodies work differently.
It was taught, yes.
Yeah. There's also the reason that, you know, you can have the cognitive dissonance of affirmative action, people don't belong here, but these actors and stuff that pay for their kids to get in there, I never questioned, did they belong in college? You know, it's that kind of thing. So I think a lot of the happy slave narrative stuff, it goes directly back to wanting to be able to love people who have done horrible things. And in the same way that people treat Michael Jackson's music, I like Michael Jackson's music, so he must not touch those boys. I love grandpa, so he must not have been mean to his slaves. His slaves. I can't process, like, I'm saying the word slave and feeling like they just part of the family. I saw a thread on Facebook one time. It was older white people sharing pictures of black people that were either slaves or like work for their family is in some sort of menial capacity, where I say menial not because to demean the work, but to say like they were not really seen as family.
Mm-hmm.
But these white people would, they fondly look back at these pictures. They were like, oh, we had Bessie. She was a, she worked for my father, for our family for generations. She raised me. She was practically my second mother. And I'm like, so y'all basically had either like a slave or a person that y'all had conscripted to work. What about Bessie's children? While she's raising your children, who's raising hers? What about the schooling she gave y'all? What about the schooling for her kids? You know, what about her husband and things that had to be done around their house? And they would go, they were basically like family. You know, Aunt Jemima. That, like, aunt, that thing that...
Uncle Ben.
Yeah, Uncle Ben. Like, these are black slaves and workers that we, quote unquote, consider family because they do things for us. They make delicious pancakes, or they make great rice, or they clean something for us. So there's this disconnect that white people will always have, and look, because most of them will never choose to educate themselves, they will always have between slavery and the abject horror that it was, and the fact that the purveyors of that horror were their family members. So it's something I've just come to accept. It obviously it could still make me mad. I try not to let it make me mad. You know, like I said, one of the reasons I read so much about this kind of shit is because I know that it has the capacity to make me mad, and I want to be able to like soberly handle it internally without always being driven to anger when I read this kind of shit. But yes, it's unconscionable that they do not see us as human, to the point where in 2019 the sign was hanging up.
Right, and nobody, and I guarantee you this is not the first time this is brought to their attention.
Mm-hmm.
This is just the first time because of social media and the way the internet rolls, and people are like, the fuck is this? They was like, oh, take that shit down.
Here's a real question, Karen. What age do you think the people who see that sign are?
Children.
Right. They're indoctrinated from a young age. That age, because see, the thing is, as black kids, we've gone to some of these sites in the South, being from North Carolina. I still remember James K. Polk's house in the slave quarters on the side.
Which is still up to today. I don't know if they still go to it, but yeah, it's still there.
Well, we were children when we went to that. And the thing I remember the most is, even as a kid, walking on the grounds, I was the most curious about the slave quarters. Because I knew that's what slavery, like, this dude was alive when slavery was okay. So I knew that there would, I'm like, And my parent, and because my parents had already kind of given me some shit to read about this stuff. So I was like, okay, it's a morbid curiosity almost. Because I want to see myself. Where's my role in this? Okay, this guy was president. It means nothing to me. I can, you know, but the people that worked for him, the people that were conscripted to him, those might be my ancestors. So I wanted to see the slave quarters and stuff, and you know, they show us that stuff, and I ask questions, and of course they're just avoiding the tough answers of it. They're shooting me bullshit like, well, they were workers and they worked out here in this quarters and they slept here and all that stuff. And I'm there the whole time, and it sank in the like horror of it all. And I think every kid of mine there felt that horror, because even then you could see the slave quarters were not as well kept as the house. You know, like, they had a much smaller place to live, they had less insulation, it was probably colder there, all that type of stuff. So you could see like this is a lesser quality of life on the same place that they had to stay. And this man is fucking living in the lap of luxury in the house with a fireplace and shit, right? And so I remember looking at all of that, and it got so real to me. Like, damn, they kept human beings, they kept people, my people, in this place. And at the same time, those white kids were realizing it too. And so that's why you have to have the sign, or you have to have the person that does the tour that goes, it's not that bad. Because those white kids were realizing it was that bad. It was that real. So then you have to wash over their feelings and be like, oh, it's not as bad as you think. Oh, look, hey guys, look, we're making cornmeal cakes. You know, I still remember they made those fucking flat cakes or whatever they were called. You know, like, I still remember the smell and the taste of them.
it was like to distract us from like, you are here where the slave quarters in, where if they didn't make these cakes, they probably got burned with a hot iron or hit with a whip or some shit, where they wish they could just be living a life and now they're stuck here. So that was kind of I've never forgotten that feeling. So
and you know, and the more and more you think about it, it's sad, but and I've kind of talked about this, I was almost the opposite of you. Mm-hmm. Because like I said, my family didn't really get in there, here girl, read this, learn about this, learn about your history. So when we went to, I remember going to the James K. Polk house, I was oblivious. I remember a lot of soap, I remember them flapjacks, I remember apple pies, I remember it being a good time. I don't, it's sad, but like the whole thing was just, oh, this was a day to get out of school. Mm-hmm. I didn't go and question slavery. I didn't go, I'm just speaking from my experience. I didn't go, mm-hmm. I didn't question any of that because I wasn't taught, hey, you need to pay attention to this. You like you're actually going somewhere that you need to pay respect to. Like these, we're going somewhere where your people and your history and your connection, to Africa is, mm-hmm. you know, that really wasn't embedded in me. A lot of the things that I learned and a lot of the knowledge that I learned about my people and to where I am now, a lot of that shit I learned as an adult, which is completely sad. You know, the first time I remember actually,
I gotta go to the next session, but go ahead, keep talking.
Oh, okay, we can go to the next session.
Okay, all right, give us a second, guys, we'll be right back. I hate to cut Karen off for the second time this episode. Okay,
we're not live.
Yeah, we are.
Oh, okay. And I think for me, I was as ignorant as the white children were, in my opinion. You know, you didn't really make me think about that till you was talking about you. I was like, yeah, I was as oblivious as the white children were.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know, it wasn't taught, you know. Nobody was like, hey girl, pay this shit any attention. Like none of that happened. So I you know, I learned a lot about my history and my people and all that stuff as an adult. You know, I never took African American history. I wasn't required to, not even in college. And it's nothing that I was like, ooh, I got to learn about this. You know, some people get to the point where they go, I want to learn. I have a desire to learn. Like none of that, had an interest in me. And but I knew I was black, you know. I knew racist things happened, but you know, that wanting and that desire to learn the shit that they don't teach you in school, I never had that until I became an adult. And then I got to the point where I felt bad and ashamed, and I felt terrible that, you know, I wasn't taught these things weren't bestowed upon me, and I felt ashamed and I felt embarrassed. But you get there whenever you get there. I had to come to that conclusion, because you can beat yourself up so bad, you can beat yourself out of actually learning because you're mad that you didn't know, or you're afraid, or you're ashamed, or you have these fears of learning these things. And I think for me, the reality of a lot of this stuff really didn't sink in for me until we went to Charleston a few years ago, and we went to that slave not slave but the market where they sold, you know, bought and sold slaves. Like, you know what, I guarantee you they probably had something like that at the gym, but I just flat ignored it. But that was the first time where I mean, because it's like, you know, this shit exists, but it's nothing like you've been like, oh my god, like it's like the switch came on and my eyes opened up. In the reality, you hear about these things, but it's in between you hearing about these things and you actually physically seeing documentations and seeing paperwork and seeing things and hearing voices, where the reality of it sinks in more deeply to me, because I never experienced those things, you know, because most of my life it's been black and white kids going to school. You know, so I reap the benefits of the people of the 60s and 70s. So I reap the benefits of those things, because you want your children to have a better future. But reaping the benefits also means the whitewashing of things, which I didn't realize at the time. So I think for me, my experience was just a little bit different, and now I hunger, I desire, I want to know more than I ever known before. You know, once you realize, you know, what happened on the slave ships when they were bringing them over, how many people, you know, are basically at the, you know, bottom of the ocean, millions of people, quote unquote, possibly is at the bottom of the ocean, all chained together. You know, when you think about, you know, them pouring salt on their wounds and shit like that while they were on these boats, when you, you know, when you begin to process this stuff, the shit just becomes more real, and it just gave me a desire to want to know, just so I can be educated, just so when people come at me and people say these very ignorant things, I won't be swayed just to be like, oh, you know what, slavery wasn't that bad.
Yeah, and also there is no shame in not knowing when you're a kid and stuff, because it's time for us not to know, you know what I'm saying? So that's the reason I don't feel like, I don't shame people for not knowing history and shit. I think all of us kind of come to it, and unless there's intervention, you never know. You know, I'm very thankful for my parents, teachers that tried to hip me the game, you know, like, that's why it's important to have black teachers.
Yes, it is.
You know, someone brought up church, but to be honest, I didn't get a lot of history lessons in church. Church was more obsessed, at least when I was a kid. The churches I went to was more obsessed with, like, man, I don't mean this to sound demeaning, but it was more of a white supremacy type of, like, doctrine to the church. And the church had to kind of be that way in order to survive. Like, not every church was Martin Luther King's church. You know what I mean? Some churches are very much like, you know, white Jesus on the walls type of church. So we weren't getting a lot of, like I said, now I don't mean this to like down all churches or nothing, but ones I went to, at least, of the few I went to when I was a kid, it wasn't necessarily like black power empowerment during Black History Month. Like, they celebrated, you know, Martin Luther King, you know, like, the reverends, you know what I'm saying, the respectable ones, but they weren't really about the non-respectable type of revolutionary type of protests and stuff. And they also weren't really interested in putting like white supremacy on display as like whatever, because at the end of the day, white supremacy brought us a lot of us Christianity, in at least the American version. So
correct,
it was a complicated fucking mess of a relationship with church and white supremacy. So even black church, of course. But yeah, I was just gonna say there's no shame in it. And honestly, I don't even like, I know this is a big thing for a lot of black people because we're angry and stuff, but I don't really want white people to feel ashamed about this shit.
No,
I want them to learn about it so then they can stop it. They have way more power than us. It's not our job to stop this.
Mm-mm.
The only thing we really can do is kind of educate white people on what the fuck is the problem. You know, not saying that there's no means of revolutionary protest, blah, blah, blah. But even if you look at most of our protest is to bring awareness to something to get other people to do the work to stop it, because we don't have the power in those places to do it. You know, Kaepernick's taking a knee is a great example of somebody that is really about elevating the conversation to get awareness for other people to do to solve it, you know?
Yeah, and because the way white supremacists and the way the structure is, you know, because I had to change my philosophy on a lot of things. I don't care how we get to a conclusion. Let's just get to the conclusion. Because the thing is, you have to disrupt whiteness for white people to look, and you have to disrupt it badly. And once people are like, oh, you're fucking up my brunch, what the fuck, they give them what the fuck they want, mm-hmm. so that they can quit blocking the street, give them what the fuck they want, so I ain't got to be with them being downtown and wasting my taxpayers money.
Well, that's one thing, right? But that's not education.
No, that's not.
That's just, this is inconvenient, and now I just want to fucking, I'll put on the Black Lives Matter shirt if y'all stop.
Right.
That's different. I think there has to be some level of like work where these motherfuckers are educated about this kind of shit so that it then stops, because if you don't know better, you will never do better, and the society is designed for them to A, never know, and B, when confronted, to feel bad, and then their feelings supersede everything that comes after that.
and I agree. And I think it used to make me mad because I'm like, the fuck you don't, why don't you just get it? Like, what the, why do we have to keep going through these fucking cycles over and over and over again? And everybody acts like they repeat and everybody gets amnesia and nobody fucking remembers and everybody forgets that this is some shit that's been happening forever and ever and ever. People forget about the, you know, the walks and the marches they had back in the day. All you, it's just a reboot. They're doing the same thing now. People forget about these black towns, you know, where they're police with these white police officers, and you get to the point where it's a racial aggression and the city is about to explode, and then it explodes, black people start protesting, burning shit down, and white people want to express, like, that's the shit that used to make me really mad. So I'm not gonna say I gave up on whiteness, but I'm like, fuck it, just pass laws so you won't do this fucked up shit to us.
But you were on those same field trips and you didn't know and you weren't curious to know.
No,
you're not even white, so they have even less incentive. You see what I'm saying? It's all designed that way. So I mean, even the look at these cycles and da 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 da. We don't like looking at the cycles. In many cases, we are the ones like, stop showing my children that shit. A lot of black people feel the duality of blackness in America. We feel like we are taking our children's childhood away to tell them slavery existed, to tell them these are your ancestors and that white people have done horrible things historically, and not all this stuff is to be trusted, and systemic racism exists, and you can get caught up in the system. And we have a duality about that, because on the one hand, yes, I don't want my child to be fucking traumatized leaving the house. On the other hand, I am responsible for raising a fucking black child to adulthood in a world that is trying to fuck them over. So it's, you know, it's a thing that makes people angry. But like I said, I try to educate myself to get past just being angry about the shit, because the next thing is like, so what benefit is there to learning this stuff? What benefit is there? What connections do I see today from things that were happening then? What things do I not trust today? Because I couldn't trust, because I know that better than to trust them then, and I look at what people trusted. Like, you know, one of the reasons I don't really get mad at the people who get mad about the crime bill, even though I know it's very, like, what do you call it, revisionist history to be mad. Like, black people wanted that bill. I was old enough to remember them wanting that bill. And to be like, these crackheads are ruining our neighborhoods, blah, blah, blah. And then to watch it now, I don't get mad at people because they have the sober hindsight of now to be like, no, this thing, it was horrible. It aided mass incarceration. It treated black people that were drug addicts like they were fucking criminals, like they were drug dealers, like, you know, like they were less than human. But the thing is, I want to know about that so I can connect it to today. Like, what's the newest thing? You know what I'm saying? Like, what are we looking at now when we talk about mass incarceration? What might be some of the pitfalls in Van Jones's mass incarceration bill and stuff like that? These kind of connections come from learning that shit. You know, it comes from, you know, going on these trips. And so this one sign being taken down is obviously a good thing. But my question becomes, what's the sign that goes up to replace it?
Right, like,
because now let's talk about the truth. Now that we've gotten the lie out of the room, let's give these kids some truth. Let's talk about the horrible conditions of slavery, even on your plantation, that you opened up to the public probably and let, like, as some sort of, you know, because to them they're like, I let people come to my plantation to show them the history of just plantation South. They don't think the history of slavery. Tell me about the slaves that escaped. What happened during the Civil War? Tell me about post Civil War with them. Tell me about, you know, where did those slaves and their families go? What are their lives like? Did they become your sharecroppers? Did they leave? Did they go to Chicago? Like, these type of things, you know? And that's the question that I always come up with. It's not just taking the sign down. It's not just taking out a Confederate flag or a Civil War monument to the South. What goes up? And that's the thing I think we haven't gotten to yet. Everybody's so convinced that we can just take down this history and we've done our job. And I'm like, that's not the point. And I love the end of this article because the person they interviewed about it says, I'm not saying we should get rid of these things, but they need to be put in the proper historical context. We do ourselves no favors by pretending that this thing didn't exist when it did. That's the part that I'm about.
Yeah, and sometimes I feel as though, I guess because, I'm not going to say you quote unquote been in a fight, but because you're more willing to and have learned, you have more history with accepting a lot of things than I have. Mm-hmm. And so I don't want to say you're quote unquote on the other side, because things do bother you and they make you angry. But I know for me, I'm quicker to get angry. Mm-hmm. Because so I haven't made it to the other side, but the thing is, you got to make it to the other side, because once you get to the other side, you can view things out of the lens of anger. Yes, not that you won't get mad, you won't get upset and all that stuff, but you'll look at it from a different perspective, and you also go, well, what can we do? And also you realize the same conclusion that most black leaders did years ago. You can't make a change because of the structure of white supremacy in the way this country is. You can't make any significant changes in this country without white people, period. Right. So you've got to reach across that aisle. And so I understand these Attica, these fuck all white. I understand how they got there. Mm-hmm. But the way this country functions, the reality of it, you cannot do it alone. Whiteness has got to help you in some way, shape, form, or fashion. And whiteness can't help you with white supremacy. So these white people have got to be taught. They got to learn. They got to, you know, somebody has got to go through the process of getting them to the point where they have a full understanding. And the thing is, once they're taught, they need to go teach others. And the thing is, like we talked about before, everybody wants to... You have white people out here doing the work and doing these things that people claim, and then people want to criticize them about doing the work. You can't have it both ways. You can't be like, white people teach yourself, and then white people, why the fuck are you teaching yourselves? You know, mm-hmm. you can't have it both ways. I enjoy the fact that once a white person understands, they like, oh, I'm not here for the bullshit. They call other people out. They're willing to take the hit in whiteness.
There's a resentment that we will always have for white people that will be at some time. Well, probably the vast majority of the time it'll be non-constructive and not productive.
Correct.
But that's just part of the game now. Mm-hmm. Like, we are owed that. You know, and this, I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's fair. I'm not even saying it's really, for the most part, it's not very expedient, and it's not very, it's like, if I was teaching a class, it's not the best way to teach a class. Mm-mm. And that's why you have to separate that out of the situation, because I think there's, we mm-hmm. have to have that, we have to have places where we can be angry and we can vent and we can rage, and we also have to have points where there's work to educate and to move people, that we can somehow separate that out for the time being, because the humanity of people is still kind of universal. It doesn't really matter if you're white, black, or whatever. Mm-mm. The humanity of a person, the hubris of a person, is about the same. So if I come in and start yelling at you, most people are going to get defensive and walk the fuck away. It doesn't matter if they're white or black. Nope. Like, a lot of what I've noticed with social media activism and online activism, it assumes some level of like altruistic tolerance from white people that has never been there, and I don't know why anyone would assume that it could be. Where it's like, I'm going to yell at this white person into doing what I want them to do. And then we see that cycle not work over and over and over again.
Yes, we have.
And so then you have to look at the whole situation. I'm like, oh, you're just yelling because you're already upset.
Yep.
You're not at the point where this is about educating anyone. You expect to be blocked or muted or unfollowed or whatever the fuck. And then when the white person plays victim, because they kind of have been made the victim in this point, we all mock the victim, and it's the same cycle over and over. But it's really about venting anger more than anything else, right? Mm-hmm. So that's not necessarily constructive. You look at most black leaders that have decided to try to better things in real life, they can't do that all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, they may have an angry speech or two, but it's not just I spend my whole day yelling at white people and chastising them, right? Mm-hmm. Because we still want to educate them. But then there's this other part of it too, that is when you brought up being angry, a lot of this stuff is just like anything else. Like, I still get angry at shit all the mm-hmm, time. Mm-hmm. Shit, when that is, to me, I get angry at stuff more in the present than in the past. Mm-hmm. So like, something horrible that happened in the past, I mean, it happened. It may be a horrible injustice, but it's nothing I can do about it now.
Correct.
And there's also things that are like of the time, right?
Right.
Excuse me. That doesn't make them less egregious, but it's of the time. But like, I remember when that lady, I mean, up the street,
old black woman couldn't use the bathroom, had to urinate in the mm-hmm. I mean, that made me so angry I cried. Like, I like, because there's an impotence in it, and then just a fundamental lack of humanity and understanding of us, and then a fundamental lack of change and progress. Now, of course, it's anecdotal, but that's a very simple thing. That's very simple math, you know. And I don't care, I can't help but think, if that was some white woman, old white woman, like, can I use your restroom, and they would just let her do it. But in the black part of town, y'all think what, it's a secret 97-year-old grandma robbery crime spree going on? No, it's just your inhumanity, your lack of seeing us as people. So, like, I get mad all the time, but there's phases to this shit. And so it's one of the reasons when Kaepernick took a knee and then they started asking him his political opinion, you know, I laughed a little and I kind of chuckled, because he sounds to me like every, like, freshman college black kid that starts reading about racism and slavery, mm-hmm. and then you get super fucking militant and all the fuck the entire system, fuck all the presidents, mm-hmm. fuck politicians, fuck everything.
Yeah, you can't be on 100 forever, but yes.
Yeah. Now, I'm not saying hotel Trey. I think that's a little different, but you know, you get that like 101 level of like, I'm mad. And it's like, now what you gonna do with it?
I don't know, I'm mad.
Right. Like, what? Okay, so what's next for you? And I think a lot of people are there. Like, you know, we all have that in us, but also, like, some people get stuck there, obviously.
Correct.
And, but it's still a phase of the thing. It's a phase of the learning. Like, it's the part, it's the ripping the band-aid off that people say they don't want to do for black kids. I don't want my kid to know about this shit, because they're going to be mad. But I just went through that a lot earlier than most people. I'm not.
Correct.
It's not that I'm like, oh, I'm so much more mature and I just know how to process. No. I was at 13 being like, fuck all white people. I'm going to join the Nation of Islam. Me and my friend Damien, his brother was in the Nation.
Oh, you a full fledged.
I was like, these white devils and all this shit. I remember that at 13. Like, listen to Public Enemy and fucking X-Clan and all this shit. I was convinced that fucking, like, you know, all white people was just the evil Yakubian blah blah blahs, and I was, you know, and the pure righteous black man. Like, you, like, that's just a part of the process, I think. Mm-hmm. And the later you do it in life, the more it happens, you know. But it's just, what are you gonna do? Are you gonna educate yourself? Are you gonna learn? Are you just gonna be mad and that's it? Because to me, it was a great relief in my life to know that these feelings weren't coming from nowhere,
right?
And it's why Get Out resonated with so many black people, because Get Out's about a vibe, it's about a feeling. These white people want to take our bodies, they want to, like, I can't trust these white people, they're smiling in my face, I don't, like, why do I feel a distrust? And then you find this big vast historical conspiracy of them, you know, essentially using our bodies and minds and labor and all this stuff and not respecting us at all. So there's that level of paranoia that all black people live with. And it resonated with so many of us, you know. And I think that's kind of life for black people in America, is there's this paranoia that I want to tell black people. I'm glad we can use this platform to do it, but to be like, hey, pick up some books, watch a couple documentaries, read up on some shit. You will actually, at first you're gonna be mad and shocked, and yes, you're gonna be sad, you're gonna go through all the feelings, mm-hmm. but at the end of that tunnel, I do feel like there is some relief, because there's a reassuring that you're not crazy. You're not just somebody who thinks, I feel awkward in these situations, I have anxiety. This is founded in things that have happened. This is truth. And now you have some. So
yeah,
that's how I feel about it.
And also for me, I think that, like I said, I'm not there yet, but now I can actually speak about things calmer. Mm-hmm. You know, more level-headed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those feelings are gonna be there, but everything ain't rage, everything yeah. ain't I just want to tear everything up.
And the other thing is, you learn, and this is the biggest probably conceit of it all, and this is probably the most, like, of all the things that I couldn't get upset about, this is probably the most upsetting, is that we just don't learn about our heroes because of this. We learn about, like, a handful of them that have been pre-selected as the acceptable black people.
Yeah, the acceptable Negro list.
Martin Luther King, Rosa Parks, who's actually the second, you know, like, there was another black woman who was pregnant, dark skinned, and sad, the same situation happened to her, and did not go as far. You know, we learn more about certain people, Harriet Tubman, Sojourner. Mm-hmm. These are not knocking these people. Harriet mm-hmm. Tubman's still my fave, but my point being, like, there's a list of just, oh, Charles Drew, you can learn about him. Mm-hmm. And then there's like people that did shit like started slave rebellions. You know, then there's people that, you know, were politicians, in the South, for the 8 years of Reconstruction. You know, then there's, you know, there's just this bunch of, just a litany of people. Every day I learn about some black person that was robbed from history from me.
Right.
You know, that no one in any classroom ever thought about teaching me about. And that's the part that still makes me mad. But in general, like, it's because we've been robbed of the resistance to this white supremacy. And that is as much what the purpose of not hurting those white kids' feelings is. That's also the purpose of not teaching us about slavery, is because then we as black kids will learn, oh, so part of the lazy slave narrative comes from the fact that slaves didn't want to do this work.
Come on.
And that was resistance to white people. What's lazier than having a slave? How you a hard-working farmer and I'm doing all the work? So, you know, the way that white women were complicit in it, the way that you know, the laws that changed that made black a thing. Like black was not a thing for a while. You just came over to America and you were, it's so fucked up what happened to Northrum, when he said that, when he was like, you know, and indentured servants came to America and everybody was like, no, it was slaves, but it really wasn't at first. It was indentured servants. Now I'm not really trying to correct the blackface guy. Like, I'm not trying to help him out.
Mm-mm.
So I just let it slide on the show, but he's right. That's what happened. And then at one point, these motherfuckers absconded and said, I don't feel like filling out my contract. It was white and black people that left.
Mm-hmm.
And the law said, we need to find these motherfuckers. So what we'll do, we'll incentivize the white people to come back. So we'll say, hey, as a white person, you won't get in as much trouble. But that black motherfucker is in trouble. Okay. So then all of a sudden, guess what happens? I now am enlisted in helping you find this person. Now black is a thing.
Correct.
You see what I'm saying? And that's something that people don't even know because it's not taught to us,
right? And then when you think about it, it was white people that actually worked the fields too, but they got fucking paid, and that's something else they don't talk about. White
indentured
people
servitude, it was not the same. Mm-mm. For white people, but it didn't start out different, is my point.
Right,
it was the same at first.
Mm-hmm.
Something happened and then it's not the same. The same thing with the one drop rule and why black babies that are fathered by white men are considered black now.
Right.
That it was not always the case. Mm-hmm. It was a time where a white man's rights were so strong, whoever he sired was supposed to inherit his whiteness.
Right.
Because how you gonna tell me as a white man my fucking child is invaluable? And then they basically had a court case that was like, no, mm-mm. Black is black. That, like, a drop, that motherfucker black. Don't fuck no black women that have babies with them. We ain't giving them no rights. You can't free them. Their progeny will always be black. Like, it now follows the mother in this situation, not the father.
Right.
That was not always the case, but these are things that they just don't teach us. So, man, that was a long, long tangent. That was not what I planned on doing when I brought up that story.
Duh!
0 to 100 for that sign.
Oh, 100 for that fucking ass sign.
Yeah, I guess I'm gonna say 75 because they took the sign down. But, put something else up, man.
Yeah, 100.
Put the truth up.
Because it was up there for so long.
Yeah. Oh, no. This is not me disagreeing.
Okay.
I'm giving it my 75 because they took it down. You, nah, 100. This is not a debate. So I feel 75 fucked with. 1.5 million slavery era documents will be digitized, helping African Americans to learn about their lost ancestors' open culture.
Wonderful.
Yep. Freedmen's Bureau Project, a new initiative spearheaded by the Smithsonian, the National Archives, and the Afro-American Historical Genealogical Society, and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, will make available online 1.5 million historical documents, finally allowing descendants of former African-American slaves to learn more about their family roots. Near the end of the U.S. Civil War, the Freedmen's Bureau was created to help newly freed slaves find their footing in postbellum America. The Bureau opened schools to educate the illiterate, manage hospitals, ration food and clothing for the destitute, and even solemnized marriages. And along the way, the Bureau gathered handwritten records on roughly 4 million African Americans. Now, these documents are being digitized with the help of volunteers. By the end of 2016, they will be made available in a searchable database at discoveredfreedmen.org. Wait, the end of 2016? So it's old? I didn't even know this. Oh, yeah, it is old. Okay, cool. Someone just shared it on my Facebook. So, yeah, go to discoveredfreedmen.org. Speaking of preserving our history, someone has said it in the chat room, so... boom. And that one leaves me zero fucked with.
Oh, zero. And you know what? This will also give people the chance, you know, start, a lot of people hopefully will start acting like they uncles and they aunts and they great uncles and their great aunts, like names and shit like that. People gonna fuck around and find their family members' names on some of these charts. Like, that's a lot of the growth. So somebody is gonna be able to trace back their family tree further than they ever could before.
Yeah, you can search for an ancestor first and last name on here on Discover Your Roots.
Ooh.
Yep. So, all right, you know what, we've talked so long at this point, I'm not gonna play any other games. I'm just gonna get out of here. We'll be back later in the week.
I enjoy talking with you,
and I always enjoy talking with you. We will do some sword ratchetness though. Police, Family Dollar clerk pulls gun on men armed with swords.
Oh shit!
First of all,
they were bucking.
First of all, apparently the Family Dollar clerks are ready for all the smoke.
All of it
in the city. God damn!
They was like, "Oh, work."
Family Dollar was ready.
Like, they was like, "Bitch, this ain't no family tree." Clink, clink.
Boy, you think this is a Publix? Okay, my life is on the line every time I step in here.
Live at 5, two men are accused of walking into a Family Dollar armed with swords. They were going to try to rob the place, but not before they were confronted by a clerk with a gun.
Jamise Price back at the store today, hearing from a woman inside when this all went down. Jamise.
Yeah, Jonathan, a store manager said it all sounds bizarre when you think back on it, but in that moment, it was scary. She told me the store has been hit 13 times since October, and that's why she believes her coworker decided to carry a gun.
Oh, they're twins. Oh, okay. You got,
it was back to business for Precious Spencer just days after this Family Dollar on Bessemer Road was robbed by two men armed with swords.
They pulled it out. One had a short one and one had a long one.
Precious, who had only been on the job for 2 days, was in the store with two more managers when it happened. She said one of those managers spotted the two men and took action.
So he got to the end of the aisle, and he had his gun in his hand, and he was like, "They're robbing us, they're robbing us. So he held his gun. So he was like, "Well, when they seen me take my gun out, then they ran. But they came in here with swords." I was like, "With swords?" So it kind of threw us for a loop, because nobody never really got robbed with swords. So I don't know if they're going to chop our heads off and get the stuff, but...
How much do you have to get robbed for you to be like, "Now this one threw me for a loop," because we never would have saw it. So I was,
I guess the 13th, the 14th time,
I said, "Oh, okay. Well, you know what?
That manager got tired. Look, I'm tired of coming up short on my resume. Bet you happened on day shift too."
Right? You robbed us so much, you get a free sub. Like, how many times y'all gonna be robbing us, man? It's getting ridiculous. Also, I had to put this on screen so y'all can see this black dude that's behind Precious. That clearly is one of those people that's happy the news is there, so they can get on camera. This always cracks me up when you're
robbing us. So he held his gun. So he was like, "Well, when they seen me take my gun out, then they ran. But they came in here with swords." I was like, "With swords?" So it kind of threw us for a loop, because nobody never really got robbed with swords. So I don't know if they're going to chop our heads off and get the stuff, but I don't get it.
Precious said associates aren't allowed to carry guns on the job.
"You're supposed to have that here. You're supposed to have that here." And I was like, he's like, "They rob us too much. That's why I got my gun." So I was kind of saying why he feel the way he feel. You know what I'm saying? Secure himself and protect who here, because he was like, "Precious, if I went here, ain't no telling what they would have done to y'all."
This clerk did what they felt they had to do at that particular time. Luckily, no one was injured.
But make no mistake, Birmingham police want these men off the streets.
Even though this may seem funny to some, we still consider these guys as dangerous. But these guys could easily escalate to using any other type of weapon, firearms.
That manager told me they are planning to get an armed security guard. Now, if you have any information, contact Birmingham Police at 254-1753. You can always call Crime Stoppers. In the studio, Jamise Price, WBRC, Fox 6 News on your side.
Thanks.
I don't know if they fired somebody. Said that they fired him. I don't know if they did or not. They may have had to, because it's like they broke the policy. But they like, well, goddamn, 13 times.
That is normally how you get fired, though.
Yeah.
Man, I can't lie. You mean
like I'm security? You should have been. Why do I got to be the one to lose my job? So it's for the greater good of y'all finally investing the money into armed security.
Right. Should have been had it. I was correct. Up here like,
I'm finna kill you. I'm finna drill you. And now you bleeding. They play gay, they play gay. When I shoot you in your neck, the noise gon' play gay.
Yep. It was like, I don't know about y'all, but I plan on going home tonight. I lose my job over this shit.
Right. I lost my job, but I kept my life. I know that much.
Come on.
All right, y'all. That's it. We'll be back later on in the weekend. Y'all don't hurt nobody out there. Okay?
Please don't.
If you have the Family Dollars, treat them nice. All right. We'll talk to y'all later. Until then, I love you. All right. I forgot. Hold up. Before I say that. No, this too much this afternoon. It's actually gonna be tomorrow morning at 10.
Okay,
because Bossy's gonna see us, and I literally have forgot about we said Sunday afternoon, so we'll do it tomorrow morning at 10. So all right, until then, I love you.
I love you too. Mwah. Mwah.